So we are starting a sugya with the Mishnah on Daf Mem Amud Aleph. So we have finally finished discussing at great length, not everything, but many of the minim and the laws of Hatzias HaPas. So now the Mishnah talks about making the wrong bracha, and the Mishnah is actually addressing a larger question, which is a bracha hakolelas, super brachas, brachas that include other things. So, you know, the Mishnah says that you make a shahaka on everything you yotze. It's not yet on the Mar Mikomas, but when you turn the page, and in the Yushalmi, it's the continuation as well, but here the machlokas is only in the Babli, it's the machlokas of Rav Yochanan, whether that applies to wine and to bread as well. Or it only applies to the four food groups of brachos, of ha'et, ha'adama, misonos, and obviously shahakal. So within, and this is another question to be entertained. I don't remember. I suspect it's about locus haposkim, but we're going to talk about making ha'etz, making ha'adama on apples and making ha'etz on tomatoes. But the question can also be asked: what if you made a bari pri ha'adama on bread, or what if you made a bari pri ha'etz on wine? Because bread comes from pri ha'adama. In fact, the first mishnah, quite clearly, I can say this country, implied that pas is bari pri ha'adama, except it got a special bracha. Because al peres ha'adama hu omer, bari pri ha'adama, chutz min ha'pas, shal ha'pas omer tech min ha'aretz. You don't say chutz min ha'pas if pas wasn't included within pri ha'adama. And ditto the first line in the Mishnah about wine, that chutz ve'ayayim, because now you make a bari pri ha'adama. So, Lewis. Please, read the Mishnah. Okay. Now, the first question, which we're not really going to explore now, except for incidentally, I don't know if we'll get there today to the end of the sugya, at the end of the tzlach, but what is the definition of pri ha'etz, and what is the definition of pri ha'adama? It's a good question. There is usually a major machlokus about this particular question. What is striking is that the Gemara does offer a definition at the bottom of the page, and the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch, the Machaber, I believe, Rambam for sure doesn't quote it. They don't even talk about what is pri ha'etz, what is pri ha'adama. Now, it's a fairly good assumption that when we are talking about Chazal's classification, we are not talking about botanic, botany. We're not talking about what a scientist would tell you. I'm told that tomatoes are fruits. I don't know what the definition is. You do not make a bari pri ha'etz on a tomato.
Well, they're carotara. They're fruits. They're just carotara.
Did you call wheat kernels fruits? Okay, so yes, I mean, it's true. Tomatoes don't look more like fruits than nobody would confuse a bean, I think, with a fruit, a legume with a fruit. Let's just take, you would take anything that you want. I don't know why tomatoes are considered a fruit.
Seeds. If the fruit, using the agricultural term.
Carrot
doesn't have any seeds.
Okay, so that's why it's called the fruit. But wheat is seeds.
Yes.
Right? But that's not, although
that's
except for corn.
That's the fruit. Yeah.
That is the fruit itself. Okay, fine.
Isn't that the difference between Hagama and Hamasilach Minara in terms of why you wouldn't be able to make
it's not that you can't make, but you would make, but the Mishnah is clear that if the Chacham had instituted a special bracha for bread, you would have said bari pri ha'adama. And in fact, according to the Mishnah, something we've learned this year, the Mishnah never mentions the bracha bari mimizonos. It appears in Rabbi Shmuel's words, it appears in Tosefta. So unless you assume that the Mishnah just never got to it, it sounds from the Mishnah that if you had I don't want to take a cookie because it's pasta over kissing, so I want to avoid that. If you had pasta from the Mishnah, it sounds as if you would make bari pri ha'adama. And if they hadn't instituted the special bracha for pas, you would have made a bari pri ha'adama on it. It's only because they said pas is special, whatever reason pas is special, therefore it gets its own bracha. So bottom line is the Gemara never gives, except for one line at the bottom of our Amud, never gives a clear distinction, but it's not going to be botanical. When you learn Maseches Kilayim, and what things are Kilayim Zemezeh, and what are not Kilayim Zemezeh, you're not going to prove anything fundamentally from genetic analysis. Chazal more likely described what appeared to the eye. And in fact, there's a species, it's very weird, it's Zunin, I forget what, it's fennel, which apparently grows a lot amongst wheat. It looks a little like wheat, it's not wheat at all, but I believe that the Mishnah, I think the Mishnah Kilayim is say that they're not Kilayim Zebizeh. Bisham is a very funny understanding of how fennel came, how this comes to be. But at the end of the day, it's based more upon, I think, appearance than underlying botany. Okay, so, but the Mishnah says, Lewis, that on bore, if you made a bracha of bore pri adama on pri ha'etz, you would be yotze. If you made a bracha of bore pri on something which is only pri adama, you're not yotze. Yes?
I'm also curious, how you
Rani is in this machlok as far as Ashkenazim? What do you say? Yeah, you've been discussing this. Ashkenazim say, I believe, Shakol Niyah Bidvaro. Nihiyah, I got to remember sure this works. Nihiyah is past tense. Nihiyah is present tense. It's more significant than Geffen and Gaffen. But nonetheless, I believe that Ashkenazim say Shakol Niyah Bidvaro. I could do a survey. Who here says Shakol Niyah Bidvaro? Who says Nihiyah Bidvaro? Ephraim. You're a closer of a tshuva, but you haven't reached there yet. Okay, excellent.
The truth is calling them, right?
I understand. I'm very sympathetic. Okay, fine. So the Mishnah says that Ha'itz does not satisfy Pri-Adama, but Adama satisfies Pri-Aitz. If you read the Mishnah alone, why would you assume that would be the case? Shouldn't?
Because Pri Ha'etz is Pri Adama, but not the other way around.
Yeah, I mean that would be so obvious that you wouldn't even think that there's a surge that he had. In fact, if you look at Rabbi Nuyona's comments here, it's very striking. The riff, and I'm not sure what one should make of this, although maybe we should make a lot about this in light of the Rambam. What is the riff quote from this sugya, from this discussion, Jimmy?
No.
Nothing. He doesn't say anything. He just quotes the Mishnah Kitzurasa, and then launches on to probably the Shatra Hunas and Rabbi Yochanan's whether Shahakol covers bread and wine as well. He doesn't go. And Rabbeinu Yona is quoted as something stating very, very simply here. You read Rabbeinu Yona and you would say, yeah, but Rabbeinu Yona is actually important. He says, Shegama ilan yorek ma'adama v'nimsa shir b'chal bore pri adama have l'fikach yatsa avo kishabirech al peres aretz bar pireitz l'yatsa she'en shan eitzkach, which is not what it says in the Gemara. Or at least, it's certainly, almost certainly, there's no way, it's very hard to read that into the Gemara. It doesn't say that. He's quoting what is in effect the second approach in the Yerushalmi, which is the intuitive approach, which is, yes, anything that grows from a tree grows from the ground. But there are things that grow from the ground that don't grow from a tree. Not very hard. And the Rift totally omits the discussion. He literally goes this first words, Valkula, Mamar Shahako Yatza, Itmar Ravuna, and Rav Yochan. So that's the way we would have read things. However, for some reason, both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi do not immediately run down this road. Now, let me remind you of something we said many times this year, because I think this is very important. How does one have to read the sugya in the Bavli? You have to read it as interpreting the Yerushalmi partially, right? That is partially what is going on here. Let's take a look at the Yerushalmi first, as we usually do, and let's see what the Yerushalmi says here. There is a parallel to this Yerushalmi in Bikurim. It shouldn't surprise you, by the way. Generally speaking, whenever you have Yerushalmis that put together two Mishnayos, you will find the sugya duplicated in both places. Very often, the editors were very lazy, so they don't bother to change the words of Hassam and Hacha if those words appear. It will appear Hassam and Hacha, and it'll be pretty clear where the sugya originated. Okay, in this case, it doesn't matter. You have two Mishnayos, which one opinion of the Gemara is going to link. In this particular case, by the way, it's pretty easy to figure out which is the original sugya, which is?
Ours.
Because from the vantage point of the Mishnah and Bikurim, this sugya doesn't explain fundamentally why what the machlokas is in the Sefer Bikurim. It explains why this din in Mishnah Brachos is this din. That's what it explains. So what does the Yerushalmi say? Continue, Lewis. The Rabbi Yehuda, this Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Okay, what does this mean? Ezra? Ezra the first.
It seems that he's making the trees insignificant. I mean, really related to the Bible. He's making trees insignificant. Right?
What does the word mean? What do the words mean?
Like straw.
No, you're right. The translation is correct, but then he missed in the point. Ezra the second.
Straw, like stalk of wheat.
Correct.
Yeah. Basically, trees are still plants, they just happen to have these weird.
Exactly.
It seems like the implication is that he believed that the straw didn't only serve a structural function for the wheat and didn't serve any sort of nutritive benefit. So it was like unimportant relative?
Well, no. That everybody would agree to. He makes the ilanos kikashim. It's as if the trees also serve no function. They're just like very thick straw that hangs around from year to year. First question. This, again, if you didn't have the mefarshim, and you'd be really left clueless. They start quoting a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, who makes the Lanos like Kasha. Like, if you didn't look at the Babli, which maybe you didn't when I gave you the Ramah Kodesh, you didn't sneak a peek, you were probably looking at this and saying, what is this talking about? Like, the Babli says the same thing, because it's taking the Yerushalmi, except for that it offers you a little context, as the Babli typically does, which is, it's the Mishnah and Bikurim, etc. So, but the Babli also doesn't formulate its expression the way the Yerushalmi does, but what I think you have to understand is that the Babli is interpreting the Yerushalmi. Okay, so there is one, I wanted to talk for a minute because this is really not a small problem, it's a big problem, but may play a significant role later. Explain Rabbi Yehuda Shita and Bikurim. What does the Mishnah and Bikurim say? So I should have sent you the Mishnah and Bikurim first. Read the Mishnah and Bikurim. Lewis? Okay. What translate this?
So you had a spring that dried up.
Okay.
And you cut the tree. But the tree was cut. I think there's different parts. You maybe read it as two separate or the same.
That's my question.
Yeah.
Is this one or two things that happened? Ronnie?
The difference in there might be different texts. One has a bit.
Understood. I got that. But why does this matter so much?
And or...
Yes, vav can still be or.
And the case of.
Yeah, but it would seem that if there is a vav, it seems constant.
Okay, fine. But why am I so interested in this particular question?
Because there's enough to be just the word.
Why am I asking? You're right, but why am I asking this question? What makes it prompt me to ask it?
Is it fundamentally a din tree, or is it a din in the fundamental?
The Gush boy in you is alive. Okay, excellent. Can we formulate something? You're correct. You are correct. But I would come about it for a more straightforward fashion. It's a big problem. You understand?
Is the essential problem here that it's no longer attached to the ground, or are there more factors?
Okay, so that's another way of saying that. But there's something that's bugging me. What's bugging me? Jimmy?
You'll probably just say it's just reprisal. Okay.
What's funny? You know, it's funny.
It seems like everyone's interested in
Ilan
and
Elta. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda's Ovid as Ha'ilan Kikashin. Okay, what about Yahweh Shamayim? What is that? How do you explain? If that's Rabbi Yehuda, that's Samar by Rabbi Yehuda, how does that explain him in the Mishnah? I understand Nick says Ha'ilan. What about Yahweh Shamayim? So, Yahweh Shamayim means it's going to be hard to grow stuff again in this field. But the tree isn't necessarily dead. Unless you say that it's one incident, or two versions. One could be that the Yahweh Shamayim and the tree dies, even though it's standing attached to the ground. You could have dead trees that are still standing.
It works a lot better for you, I think, if you say that it's one case.
Well, certainly the way that Yerushalmi explains it. And the truth is, it's true for the Babli as well. But this is going to be important, because there's a Tosos on Daf Mem Amud Aleph in Brachos, who offers a very different approach to this, which is important, which will explain both and might put an entire different spin on everything. That thought has occurred to me. But then you have to say that you make the problem worse on a certain level.
Question is,
so you want to say that Yavei Shamayim means you don't have, that ground without water is not, and could you bring proof to that? Al derech
hadrash.
Right before Eretz Kifo Sora. Right? Ayanosu Sonosio Tzimba. That's the definition of Eretz Yisrael. It's Ayanosu Sonosio Tzimba Mikavahar. Okay. That's unfair. Okay. So to keep that issue in mind, in other words, what role does Yavesh Hamayan here? But right now, the Yushalmi certainly explains that Yehuda made Ilanos Kikashim, which means that it's not that wheat is like a tree with a thin stalk, it's that an apple is like wheat with a thick stalk. And just as, where does the wheat fundamentally draw its nourishment from? And Yonatan, I think you may have given this, somebody gave this formulation. The wheat is just a conduit, you know, for the stuff to get from the ground into the wheat kernels, to make the wheat kernels. So too, the tree is just the conduit by which the nutrients get from the ground into the fruit, which I think actually is true, but okay. What's that?
You have white bucket from sunlight instead of the tree spot.
But I would assume that wheat also needs to get sunlight. So
all kinds of people. So like, there's an experiment done where they hung a plant in a flower pot in the air, and all the water was in a closed system, and it gained weight, and that's how they learned that plants suck up carbon dioxide.
Okay.
And that's where their mass comes from.
Okay.
And so most of their nourishment isn't actually from the ground.
It isn't from the ground. Okay. But Chazal certainly didn't know that. Okay. So. So that's what Yehuda says. He made the Ilanos Kikash. Now continue, Lewis. Ayushami. I'm Rabbi Yose.
I'm Rabbi Yose. Shidir Hakulhi. Perot Ilan Mitzlal. Perot Adonah. Ein Perot Adonah Mitzlal. Perot Adonah.
Okay. So that was what any number of you said. That's what sounds like Rabbi Yona says. That everybody agrees to this. This has nothing to do with the... whether how we view the tree, is it just a conduit? Is it somehow the primary generator of the fruit? No, we understand that ultimately the tree derives its nourishment that it brings to the fruits from the ground. It grows from the ground. Peiros ha'eitz grow from the ground. That's called pri adama. Whereas peiros ha'adama do not grow from trees. Okay. Fine. Now, the question, of course, one would ask then is... Well, let's not ask the question yet. Let's read the Bavli. Lewis, your last task. Go ahead. So let's look at the Gemara itself. And the Gemara says, Man. Okay. Now, the Bavli here is more informative than the Yerushalmi because it actually tells us which Rabbi Yehuda. Now, allow for the possibility, which I think is wrong. I think, I'll give her fruit, it's possible the Yerushalmi had something else in mind, a different Rabbi Yehuda. I highly doubt it, because given what the Yerushalmi says, it seems extremely likely they're making a reference to that Mishnah. A. B. The editors of the Yerushalmi put that in Mitzvah Sugya Bikurim, so that should really clinch it. So the Bavli certainly is correct, that's the Mishnah. But the Bavli doesn't say that Ilanos are Kikashim. It says something else. What does Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak say? Ikar Ilan Arahu. How do you want to translate that? I am shocked, by the way. I am shocked how relatively little discussion this gets, talking about what this terminology is. Right, yes. What?
Translating literally the...
First, the word Ikar has many different meanings.
The main part. We could say, right, but that's the problem.
Correct. Correct. Ikar can mean the root. Right? You don't, there's no shoresh v'ikar l'davar zeh. And ikar can be the root. So, the main thing, the root, so take a look at Rashi, that's our one, you know, Ikar Ilan Arahu. Yes. Right. So interesting, Rashi doesn't really take the statement at face value. It's not that the Ikar Ilan is the Ara, it's the Ikar Peros Ilan is the Ara. Now, the truth is, I don't like Rashi's, I would prefer a different interpretation of Rashi. Why? Because I'm assuming that the Yushalmi is the template for this interpretation. And when you say he made the Ilanos Kekashim, that doesn't mean Peros Ilan Kekashim. It means actually the Ilanos are Kekashim. So, again, what are the alternatives here?
Well, I was going to ask, why are those two contradictory? Meaning, Rashi seems perfectly reconcilable with the Yerushalmi.
It's not that they're contradictory, but if you're told, what does the phrase mean? Right? You could talk. Of course, you could talk about two different things. You could talk about the Peiros Elam deriving nourishment from the ground, which, by the way, sounds more like the second day in the Yerushalmi. Or you could talk about something about the nature of the tree, being the Ilan Ikar da Ara.
You say the Ikar of Hero, that the things that they're plants, the things that come from the ground, and you say the Makal Kanan Yerushalmi is Rabbi Yehuda is saying, oh, the tree doesn't really matter, it's just another type of stem like Kashim, whereas Dibra Hakol is no, that it happens to be plants, but they are a distinct type of plant.
No, but the second day in Yerushalmi is that you don't have to talk about what a tree Elon stands for. At the end of the day, nourishment, it grows from the ground. I think that's the second answer. But the first answer in Yerushalmi appears to be something about the trees, not about the fruits.
What it does is, the first answer minimizes the role of the Elon, while the second answer is the thing that the primary can still be the tree, but the tree ultimately is still derived from it. So you're not, so the second thing doesn't minimize the Ilan, it says it's just like it's a told it, you know.
Okay, but so when you look at, but I it's pretty clear that the Babli's interpretation is interpretation number one in the Yerushalmi. I mean, I thought if there's any way to make it work in the second. Because the second interpretation of Yerushalmi says what Yehuda and the Chachamim Bikurim is irrelevant here. Everybody has nothing to do with that. So I think that's the correct formulation of how to understand the two days in Yerushalmi. But my point is that Rabbi Yehuda in the Yerushalmi is that Ilanos are Kekashim. It's about the nature of the tree. So Rashi is interpreting this line, again, Ikar Ilan Arahi, as referring to the Peros, is a little bit, doesn't make as much sense. Right? It has to be Ikar Ilan Arahi, the Ikar Ilan Arahi.
Also, what kind of statement is that? We know the paper.
Yes, we're not obviously talking about a botanical reality. We're talking about a conceptual classification.
Do you think that it's relevant to the growth of the tree?
Well, what?
Like, that's a good question.
But how?
Like, so when I just look at the words Ikar Ilan, the way I'm tempted to read it, again, I'm reading it in light of the Yerushalmi, the Ikar Ilan Arahi is that what role does the tree play? We tend to think of the tree because it's there all the time, that the tree has its independent existence. But if really Ikar Ilan is Arahi, the primary function of the tree is just an extension of the ground, like the Kashim are just an extension of the ground. So that's what that's how I would want to read this.
If Rabbi Yehuda is minimizing the role of the tree, then the grammatical structure of like what's the object of the sentence Yerushalmi is minimizing the role of the tree, then they should be roughly equivalent, because if what you're saying is the tree doesn't matter, then either way you're saying the tree doesn't matter.
No, I agree, but Rashi subverts the words of the Gemara to Ikar Kol HaPeiros Ki HaAretz. That's the challenging part. Ikar Peiros.
The subject of the Mishnah. The fact that Gemara talks about Ilan is an explanation as to why the Peros, as to what the bracha is, but the focus of the Mishnah itself is on the Peros.
So if I didn't have the Yerushalmi, I would agree, right? But the Yerushalmi's focus is not on the Peros. It's on the definition of what the role of an Ilan is.
Yeah,
right? Avedas ha'ilanos kikashin. You could say then, with respect to now how the pears. Okay, it's possible. It's not impossible. Rashi does sometimes quote the Yerushalmi, but it's not clear how much Rashi uses the Yerushalmi. So I don't know whether he's ignoring the Yerushalmi here, or he thinks that you still can understand it in this fashion. Okay. So now, take a look at Tosfos. Thank you, Lewis. Who would like to read something? Ezra, the first. And what? So read the Tosfos. No, I should want to read Rabbi Yehuda. I didn't put it on here, but read it anyway. I have wrong order. Okay, yes.
The Nira, the Halakha of Rabbi Yehuda, the Stamlan Tana Kavase, Stamlan Tana Kavase, the Imbar Alpersa Ilan, Bari Priyada Mayata.
Okay. So what does it mean, the Halakha of the purity of Yehuda, because the Stamlan Tana Kavase? What does that mean? You know what
that? Well, it's the sum of the Mishnah is quoted without reference.
And therefore, what does that tell us that we didn't know before Imsak Halacha?
Usually it means that that's how we passed it.
I know, so what does that tell us that we, Imsak Halacha? Because we have a Stam Mishnah that tells us...
Because in part of Stam Mishnah, this is the same opinion as Rabbi Yehuda.
Therefore?
We hold that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda.
In Bikurim. In Bikurim. That's my point. It means Tosfos is concluding that we passed him like Rabbi Yehuda by Yavesh HaMayan v'nitzat Ta'ilan, because we have a Stam Mishnah here that the Gemara says embodied. It doesn't say, it's not explicitly linked by the Mishnah, but there are cases in the Mishnah where you have a Machlokes in one place where they explicitly argue about an issue, and another place the Mishnah just Stam assumes that. So I don't want to go down the road. If you look in the Achronim here, there's extensive... Well, there's an extensive discussion in the Achronim here. We have a rule, the Gemara says, that when you have a Stam Mishnah followed by a Machlokas of that issue in Halachic Stam, you can't use the Stam Mishnah as proof that that's the way you pass it. But when you have a Machlokas, the Acharkas Stam, then that means that Rebbe, by the time he got to formulate the Stam Mishnah, he was telling us that that is the way we pass it. So the problem is you can only do that within one Masechta, the Gemara says, but within two Masechtas, if anybody is doing Daf Yomi here, more likely the fathers than the children, if anybody happens to be doing Daf Yomi, so this is something that came up sometime in the last couple of weeks. How do you deal with the Seches Nezikin, which is the three bubbles? Is Kulon Nezikin Chad Masechta? In which case you can follow the rule, a Stam Mishnah and a Machlokas and Baba Kama followed by a Stam Mishnah and Baba Metzia is a Machlokas Kastam and Halachas Kastam. Or do you say that no, that each of these three Masechtas is a different Masechta, and therefore we don't know what the order of the Mishnayos as they were taught were, and therefore it could be a Stam Mishnah, a Machlokas and Baba Kama, and a Stam Mishnah Baba Metzia could still be Stam B'Achakach Machlokas, because you just don't know what the orders of those Masechtas are. But certainly, within two Masechtas, the Gemara says you can't do the rule of Stam B'Achakach Machlokas, because you don't know which one came first. Ronnie? Well, that's the Machlokas Amarim in the Babli. I know in Eretz Yisrael, in the manuscripts of the Mishnah from Eretz Yisrael, all that we have, it's 30 prakim of Nezikin. But the Gemara has, in a couple of places in Shas, over the Bava is whether or not it's one Masechta or not one Masechta. Obviously, from internal, the last two prakim, the last parak of Bava Metzia belongs to Bava Basra. You know, the Tosefta, if you look at the way the Tosefta is structured, when it's split up, it doesn't mean anything. There are three Bavas, but they way overlap the bounds of the Mishnayos. It doesn't really prove anything. So it's a Machlokas, how to treat them for these purposes. Machlokas, Yechakav, Stam. But Tosa says that since we have a Stam Mishnah that's in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and how do we know that? Because the Gemara says, Ma'antana, therefore must be repasked by Yehuda that even if the Yavei Shamayim, the Niktzat Ha'ilad, you are maybe Bikurim, and you are Koreh. Incidentally, we didn't just talk about the basic reason. Why would it be that you couldn't be Koreh according to the Chachamim? No, that you're reading that Tosfos into it. The simple interpretation, most we shall say, is that you can't say the Al Ha'adama Asher Nasat Ha'adam, right? Because the land isn't really Kayim in the state of producing fruit anymore. So whenever you have something in general, whenever you have something in the Parsha Bikurim that you can't say, it's not true, so then you might be maybe, but you don't read the Mikra Bikur. For example, a ger, it's not focused, but a ger, according to the Chachamim, we don't paskin, I believe we don't paskin that way, because a ger can say, you know, Rabo Seinu, so therefore the Chachamim say he can't read the Parsha Mikra Bikur, and Rabbi Huda disagrees and he says that Avram Avinu is Avalon Goyim, so he is Abu Seinu.
Is it
Abu
Seinu? I thought a ger couldn't do it because they don't have, like, Seachuzah, because they weren't given the land.
No, as long as you have a kinyan haguf, something kind of kinyan haguf, a ger would be able to do so.
All right.
Okay. So anyway, so Tosfos says what's fairly obvious. Now, the obvious implication of what Tosfos is saying, it's not really a big leap, is what would the halacha be according to the Chachamim and the Mishnah Bikurim if I picked up an apple I made a bori pri hadama? According to the Chachamim of the Mishnah Bikurim, who said that Yavei Shamayim Mitzvah Ta'ilan, maybe the Eino Kore, so you would say you're not Yotze. Right? Only because the Gemara said it, that this Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Okay, so that would be very nice, and if we weren't grateful to the Rambam, we would all go home now, Shira is over, finished, and we've solved the problem. We understand the Sugya. But this is, by the way, one of those cases, and we have a number of different approaches to the Rambam. I don't think we're going to finish it all today, but I will state the following at the outset. If you gave me this Gemara without the letters on it, I would have probably more likely to bet that the Rambam paskins that your Yotze on an apple with a Bori Pri Adama, and that the Rambam paskins that Yavei Shamayim V'Nitzvah Tza'ilan may be the Eino Kodesh. Now, you might be looking at me and thinking, is the man out of his mind? Why would he look at this, not draw the obvious inference that the Rambam is going to pass in the same way as Tosfos, because that would be the logical thing to do. So there is a reason why I would, am not at all surprised, not in the least bit surprised, that the Rambam paskins the way that he does. The Rambam paskins the Mishnah Bikurim as you would expect it to paskin the Mishnah Bikurim, which is like the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda, because Yochev Rabbam Halach Rabbim. And then he passes like a Stam Mishnah Brachas. It makes perfect sense. Yes.
Why is the Al Mishnah? How would you infer that Chachamim would say that don't make a bracha based on what they're holding in the Bikurim?
Well, if the Gemara feels Mantana on our Mishnah that a Bori Pri Adama can pat the fruits of the tree, if they say that that's Rabbi Yehuda. So they're assuming that the Chachamim of that Mishnah Bikurim would say that a Bori Pri Adama cannot pat the fruits of the tree.
But Chachamim could be holding maybe they occur for something completely separate reason. I mean, I know what's not said, but even before a reading that, could just be a din in Bikurim as opposed to a din in Paris.
On our own, I would have said that. But the Gemara is saying, the problem is that the Gemara is saying that this Mishnah is tied to that Machlokas. If I agree with you, if I read both Mishnayos and I don't learn this Gemara, and I don't learn the first line in Yerushalmi, I would have naturally assumed whatever the Machlokas is about there, it has something to do with Bikurim and Mikra Bikurim, and for whatever reason, I would have said, of course you don't say with that Bori Pri Adama on an apple, because it grows from the ground. Yes, it's got a tree in between, so it's better. We prefer specificity in brachos, that's a general tendency. How far we go is a question. But I would have said, of course you don't say, like the second Etzu Shami. I agree 100%. The problem is, once the Bavli says that Man Tana, who is the Tana of this Mishnah, who holds that Iker Ilan Arahi, and is identified with Rabbi Yehuda, you assume that the Psak of this Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion there.
And to the exclusion of the Chacham.
Because otherwise you wouldn't have said Man Tana Rabbi Yehuda. And that's at least the surface reading. The Tzlach has ultimately going to come up with some idea of why it could be the Chachamim too, and the Gemara is saying this, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't make that next step of an inference. Great. But so starting with that premise, that the Gemara certainly seems to be making guys, the word you know, words, what's the word? What does it make between this, Rani, it's your job. What does it make between this Mishnah and that Mishnah? What is it called, the correspondence? I teach them a little Yiddish. It's Ushel, between the Machlokes the Chacham and this Mishnah. So reading that, I assume that if you pass it like the Chachamim, that you may be Deir Kore, then you're not Yotze with a Bori Pri Adama on an apple. And if you pass it in like Rabbi Yehuda, that Mishnah, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this Mishnah. That's what I would have assumed. And I'm not surprised that the Rambam doesn't pass it in that way. Okay. So now let's read the two Rambams. Continue reading, Ezra. You're not done. Let's wait on the other Tosas. Okay. So how does the Rambam read the Mishnah? Before you tell me how he passed it, how does he read the Mishnah? Shimon?
One case.
No.
Yaveh Shamayim, Osh and Ixas Ta'ilim. It's two. For sure two. Vav is ambiguous. There are hundreds of Vavs in the Mishnah that mean or, but no O is, to the best of my knowledge, means and. That's pretty good. I think you can, I never like to say with absolute certainty the rules by Bikias isn't that great. Then if that's what I bet a lot of money on. I wouldn't have bet as much money on the Rambam contradicting himself in the Tzad. Right?
It's only because he's on Mishnah.
What's that? That's because. Are there any O's in Tanakh that you know that mean?
Oh,
yeah.
What?
Oh,
well, no? That's a
drasha.
Okay.
What?
I believe.
Christy, you made up a pasuk there.
There's
not O. Show Allah Deles. Oh, Allah Mizuzah. But nobody says that that's an and. The fact that the drasha is that you can't do it with mezuzah, I just still think that's an and. That's still an or, not an and. It's not two things that you're doing, it's only one. Okay, so yes, the Rambam is written in Mishnah Hebrew, it's true, but nonetheless. Okay, so the Rambam says in Hilchos Bikurim, Pasuk is like the Chachamim. Not a surprise, why?
Because he thinks that
Ikar is still karka. No, all he says is that when Yavesh, the fact that
karka is the thing here for him which seems to make or break the Torah. The reason he gives for why you're making the low karka.
Now that's Pidon is the karka.
It's as if
he's
the karka.
Pidon is the karka, then it can't be like this.
Because he says that it's not that Pidon is not karka. Pidon is like a kashan.
What?
Well, certainly the Yushalmi. Certainly Yushalmi does not read that way. With Ikar, Ikar Ilan Arahi. So I don't think that's what the Rambam is quoting here at all. Firstly, he's posting against,
yes.
He's against Rabbi Yehuda. I think he's just saying that the you can't say, and I hope we get into Pasuk right, but Allah Adama Asher Nasata Ladu, is that Bikurim, is that Bibi Meisers? Is in the plural there? Yes, that's why I'm trying to quote. I may be quoting the wrong part of it. I don't want to go through the whole parsha to get it back. Yes, for the first three. Yeah, I want to just get it straight. I wanted to see, where's that parsha? Yeah, I think that Asakali makes the singular makes more sense. Al Damash and Asaf Halarwa, that is the, it's Vidimaisos, yeah. Okay. So, Vatkoin Avisi is Rishithriya Ha Damash and Asaf Ali Hashem. So if there's no Adama, so then you can't say Adamash and Asaf Ali Hashem, because there's no Adama. So this is not the Gemara Brachos. This is just the simple explanation, I think, of yeah, because Ilanus Kakashim makes that impossible. You can't. It's not Ilanus Kakashim. I think he's just, firstly, sometimes the Rambam gives his own reasons for drashas.
Sure.
He does that all of it. He's notorious for doing that Mishnah Torah way. He gives his own drasha for the din. So, but I would assume, let's assume for the moment, he's not quoting, that's not the line that he's quoting. Because anyway, it would be the opposite. Okay. So he says it's Kamisha Eno Karva. Share Yabda, because it's not useful anymore. Now what does he write in Brachos?
When he says She'in Lo Karka, does Lo refer to the tree or the fruit?
Neither. The person.
Oh.
Hashem Asaf Ali Hashem.
Gotcha.
Okay. So continue. Ezra? Beirich. Beirach.
Beirach al peris ha yulem bori priya adama yakta. Beil peris ha adama bori priya yitz lo yakta.
So he's passing the Korb Yochanan, which we haven't seen yet, that Shako really covers everything. So the Rama paskins exactly like the Mishnah. Now, in case you were wondering about that, if you look at Dagos Maimonios, now the reason I quote Dagos Maimonios here is not because he adds anything. I quote it only because Dagos Maimonios tells you what his gear said the Rama was. Because Dagos Maimonios says, Moki like Rabbi Yehuda. We have Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak. He, if this is the correct nusach of Dagos Maimonios, he had Shmuel. But he says Kistam Asnisan, even though the Gemara says it's Rabbi Yehuda. So what text of the Rambam did the Dagos Maimonios have in front of him? Because there are apparently two nuschos of the Rambam: Berach Apira Sa'ilan, Bari Pri Adama Yatza and Lo Yatza. So Yatza is like our Mishnah, Lo Yatza is not our Mishnah. So what Nusach of the Rambam did Hagos Maimonides have in front of him? Yatza. It's a lot of fun, actually. This is not a case where you expect it to change, but when you learn Hilchos Tefillah for the Rambam, I think I mentioned this once at Shir about Berachas Torah, but it's all over the place. Hagos Maimonides will make comments, but his general principle is to quote Ashkenazi Torah when it's different from the Rambam, or sometimes when it confirms it. But often he quotes this, okay, that's what the Rambam said, Hagos Maimonides is a student of the Maharami Gutenberg, and he'll tell you, okay, but this is what the Ashkenazi Torah is. So very often he says, the Rambam says, this is the Nusach of this Brach or whatever, and Hagos Maimonides will tell you, well, but we do this. And there are many times in the regular pre-Frankel Rambam edition, printed editions of the Rambam, where you look at the Hagos Maimonides and you don't understand why he's disagreeing with the Rambam, because he says the same thing as the Rambam. Except for, obviously, he's not saying the same thing as the Rambam. The Rambam's text was changed by the early printers to match what Ashkenazim do. So in one case, in Birchas HaTorah, they moved the letter, that we discussed this, they moved the letter of the Hagos Maimonides, the printers, to another place in the Rambam, for whereas originally, because they had changed the first nusach of the bracha, so now it matched what that ghost was saying, so they had to, it didn't make any sense that way, so they moved it down. Right, but this is all over. When you cannot learn the Rambam, Hilchos Tefillah, or Hilchos Brachos, you cannot learn it with the old printed editions, because you're not looking at the Rambam. When you're looking at nuschos, you're just looking at something else. So anyway, it's clear from that ghost Maimonides, which is obviously, given that ghost Maimonides is writing 13th century, probably mid-13th century, he said, contemporary of the Rosh, it's a fairly early witness to the text of the Rambam. But we know what the Rambam has here, because we have the Rambams for the first, remember, with the first two Svarim of the Rambam, Ma'ad and Ava, we have the Huntington manuscript, which the Rambam was, he didn't write it, but he was Magiyah. So we have evidence what passed from underneath the Rambam's pen as to what he intended the Mishnah Torah to read. So there's no question here what the Rambam actually wrote, even though sometimes other Rishonim seem to come up with other Gersos. So the Rambam was presumably meant to solve the problem with the Rambam. That is one of the easiest solution to solving any problem that you have, is amending the text. Yes. Not a very good method, not a very sound method, but it's a very effective method. You know the introduction to the Sefer HaYashar, Sarabenu Tam, writes, he talks about a cherem against Magiyei Sarim, people who had changed, Sarim just means Gemaras, that's pretty much what they had then. I don't know if it was a formal cherem, but he scathingly attacks those people who changed the text to solve problems, and he's talking about his older brother Rashbam. He says, as much as my grandfather Rashi was Magia, my brother Rashbam was Magia 10 times as much. So Rabbeinu Tam was a very creative reader, but he amends the text less, except when he does. Okay, so anyway, the Rambam, it's pretty clear, had this gear, so even if the Rashba in passing, it sounds like, assumes that the Rambam had the other gear, so it's consistent.
The grace to amend in red pen, so you know what part he's putting
up. Okay. So, we've got a problem, Houston. Right? The problem is that the Gemara leads the Mishnah, the Psaka, the Mishnah, that you're Yotzei with Hadama on apples, to the Machlokas of Yehuda and the Chachamim about Yavei Shamayim Nitzet Ilan. And the Gemara says that only according to Rabbi Yehuda are you Yotze, according to the Rabbanan, you shouldn't be Yotze. And yet the Rambam Paskin like both of them. So,
how would someone ever hold that you can't be Yotze on Paras Ilan to pray for Adama when so could that be Korim, say, Peshi, pray for Adama?
Did you come up with that question yourself? Because the tzlach actually points that out. No, that's not a criticism. You didn't get there. It's a long tzlach. The tzlach points that out. That how can anybody say the Shivas Aminim contain two grains and five fruits? How can anybody say that it's not called Pri Ha'adama? So, yes, that is a very good observation. A very good observation. Okay, so we've got a problem. So let me take this opportunity to talk for a moment methodologically. When confronted with a seeming contradiction in the Rambam, how does one solve that problem? So obviously, briskers immediately jump to some conceptual resolution, which is sometimes true. Which, fundamentally speaking, that approach, even when valid, only works if the stira is a logical stira, limited to the Rambam himself. When the stira is against something that the Gemara presents, so you can't, as I said at the beginning of the shir, whatever svara you offer, whatever brilliant conceptual distinction you offer, is wrong by definition, because if the Gemara, right, the Gemara is the ground zero of truth. If the Gemara speaks in one voice on an issue, that is true, you know, truth with a capital T in terms of learning. And therefore, your svara can be a great svara. It can be better than their svara, but it's wrong because the Gemara rejects it. So the question is then, if it's not a place where the conceptual root is an option, or, like myself, that is not necessarily your first inclination, so then what are the avenues that are open to us? So the first avenue that opened up here, but I've already shut it for you, is what some of the Achronim point out, and what some of the Rishonim have, which is what?
Different girsa.
It could be a different girsa in the Rambam. We have the wrong girsa in the Rambam, which is not an option here. It could be a different girsa in the Gemara. Now, one might have been tempted to say, there's not a fine, you've looked at the Kisvayat, right? One could come up, it's the kind of thing you might get somebody to say, the Rambam wasn't goresh this one line in the Gemara, man tana d'ikar, it's just a short little piece. And you know why? How you know the Rambam wasn't goresh it? Because the Rif doesn't have it. Now that's a raya shel hevel, as Rani, you knew it when you said it, you were shaking your head, not because you were advocating it, because you knew I wanted you to say that. But that's not proof, because the Rif, we know, condenses everything. He takes out the Shach Levitarya. So if for the Rif the din is that Berech Apiros Ha'ilan, Borei Pri Adama Z'yatza, he doesn't need to talk about who's the Tana. So the fact that the Rif omits that Shach Levitarya Gemara doesn't mean anything. So the Girsa Avenue is the first avenue, but it's not available here, because we know what the Rambam's Girsa, the correct Girsa in the Rambam is, despite the fact the Mishnah will mention the other Girsa Osana, but he notes that doesn't seem to be primary Girsa. And there's no real evidence to suggest that the Gemara Bavli doesn't have this line. None of the Kisvayat are missing it, and therefore it's a very difficult route to go down. If it were missing in the Bavli, then it's easy. You would say, like, Rabbi Yonah, yeah, he doesn't hold the Yusha that first day in Yerushalayim. That's a wild svara. You know, takes the Mishnah Kapshuta, that we all would have taken the Mishnah and gone home very happily half an hour ago. Okay. What other avenues are open to us? Ronnie.
You could just say that sometimes in the Mishnah, you could review that. Even assuming that the Bavli's making a correct assertion about the Nikudat Machloke, so sometimes the Dot Yachid can win.
You're really a Yushalmi man. You're like the Yushalmi guys. Machalfa, she custom, the so-and-so, the end. We don't have to explain why positions are worse. But the Bavli never likes that. And that is very... You're right. At the end of the day, you know, despite that famous quote, that consistency of the hobgoblin of small minds, nonetheless, we would like to assume that there's some conceptual consistency or logical consistency between the two positions, between the different positions. Rebbe often has contradictory assumptions in the Shnayis, but the Gemara always say that this is Rabbi Meir, that's Rabbi Yehuda. Right? It doesn't leave it, say, and if it's not, and if there's a way to reconcile the two, we'll reconcile the two. Right? But Isa has to be a stira, and Rebbe meant use this opinion here or versus that opinion there. Now, here's the problem. So what you're saying is correct, but let me give you an example. It's a dafyomi from not so long ago. It's really not, it doesn't belong to the Bava Kamma. It's in Maseches Chulin. So if you're starting at dafyomi soon, you'll get to it. What is the din of a shechita she'eina ra'uya? You shech that animal, and it turns out to be a trefa, so you can't eat it. Is that called shechita or not? Now, there are lots of different nafkaminas. For example, do you have to do kisui hadam? Do you have to cover the blood if it was a bird or it was a deer? Or if you shecht an animal, it turns out to be a trefa, can you shecht the animal's offspring? Oso v'espina. Right? If you shoot an animal, you are allowed to shecht its offspring. And oso v'espina does not apply if you made the first one in a vela. It has to be shechita. Lo tishchatu b'yovechad. So the Gemara posits, and reasonably so, it seems to be the case, that Rabbi Shimon's position in all sorts of misgarot kashas is that shechita she'eina ru'uya lav shemei shechita. So according to Rabbi Shimon, you don't have to do kisui adam on the blood of a bird that turns out to be a trefa or a deer that turns out to be a trefa. You're allowed to shecht the deer, an ox. You can shecht the cow if it turns out to be a trefa. You can shecht its calf. On one day, not a problem. Rabbi Meir says shechita she'eina ru'uya shemei shechita. And therefore, you have to cover the blood, you can't check the offspring. Rebbe is so saying to Mishnayos in Perek Kisui Hadam, according to Rabbi Shimon, that you don't have to do Kisui Hadam. And in Perek also, but no, the previous Perek, he's so saying the Mishnah, that he's also to shecht. Right? Shecht up and then say, straight for you, not allowed to shecht the blood. So the Gemara comments that he was so saying in one place, like Rebbe Meir, and one place, like Rabbi Shimon. We passed him that way, if I'm not mistaken. But the reason we passed him that way, we assume that the standards are different in the two places. Right? There is a conceptual distinction. But there, the Gemara didn't say that it's mamash haba hatalia, that it's impossible to hold like Rabbi Shimon in some places and like Rabbi Meir in other places. But here, the Gemara seems to be the problem. Is the Gemara, the Mishnayos on their own are not a problem. Even if I thought, right? Now, even if I thought that this Mishnah was somehow tied to Rabbi Yehuda, I could have come up with my own shita. But the problem is, the Gemara says that it's haba hatalia. Yes.
So the way I read the Gemara initially was that it's not asking man tana who's in tana of Mishnah. The Gemara is asking who's the Tana who propagates this idea that the Ikar is the land and not the tree. Right? So we point to this machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. So Rabbi Yehuda holds this. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Chacham don't hold to this position. It just means that I can't derived from that machlokes, what that opinion of the Chacham was.
So this is one of the positions that's broached by the Tzlach, which is the Gemara, and the Shagis Arius does the same thing in very similar fashion, which is that it's possible that the Chacham would agree with the principle as well, but you can't tell it from this particular sheet of theirs. In other words, it's possible that they do hold that, they would agree, Iker Laranahu, but they think in this case there's something else going on, but because of that something else, we can't tell for sure what the Hilbeik, and therefore the Gemara chose to say, it's Rabbi Yehuda. Or there is even a position that the Shagis Arius offers, is when the Gemara says Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't mean it's Rabbi Yehuda not Chacham. It means the Rabbi Yehuda means these bar balei putta. In other words, the Indian that's incorporated in this Mishnah is in fact behind our Mishnah. But it doesn't mean that the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda disagree about this particular point. And there are other examples where when the Gemara will point to a particular Mishnah, it's not only one sheet in the Mishnah, but the way the handle for the sheet is easy to say Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to how else are you going to refer to the Mishnah? That's a possibility. So by doing that, one is essentially rereading what the Gemara says. Right? You thought the Gemara said is the Man Tana is Rabbi Yehuda and not the Chachamim, and instead the Gemara says who is the Tana who clearly holds this way? It's Rabbi Yehuda and it's Machlokas, but it's Lav Dafke. It could be the other Tana, including the Chachamim of that Machlokas hold that way. The Rabbi Yehuda, not Machlokas, is clear that he holds this way. All right, so that is another possibility. Any other possibilities? Ronnie? Okay, so the Kesef Mishnah seems to go down that road, that the Rambam thought that it passed in like the second day at the Yushal. Now, I don't refuse to accept that, because you know I've already made my categorical assertion. I believe the Rambam never rejects the Bavli Vayu Yushalmi, because I read what he says in Sakhdamat of Mishnah, and I take him seriously. And a lot of the Echronim also question, particularly in this case, because it's not like the Yerushalmi also doesn't have as its first day what something like what the Bavli says. then it's Dafka Rabbi Yehuda. Until Rabbi Yose comes along and says, you know, no, it's the radical. So it's strange that the Rambam should be put aside the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, especially if it's not just one, it's not the only day of the Yerushalmi. Why did he reject that? That's what the Panei Shura starts off with, and that's what the Tlaf and the Shagas say also about the Sunnah. It's like, come on, Rambam's not possible about the Yerushalmi. So again, somewhat, but that is an approach, because the Kesef Mishka, that's sort of what the Kesef Mishka says. There is one other approach, which I did put on the Maror Mekomos, but I left a long Maror Mekomos starting at the end, which I've touched upon a few times, but it's worth revisiting. I've given you actually some of these material example here, and I'll take a few minutes just to explain. The question is, how did the Rambam relate to certain kinds of ukimtas in the Gemara? This is a somewhat controversial view. That what I'm about to say is nothing that I'm fundamentally saying on my own, because the Rambam says this. But you have to understand the radioactive nature of this in yeshiva history, which is, there was a professor of Talmud in Revel, Professor Meir Simcha Feldblum, as a front of Racha, who taught a lot of the senior Rashi yeshiva Talmud, because they had to take. That was the back before I was a student in yeshiva. Going back a little before that, students had to do MHL in Revel. So if you want to know, Rav Schechter has a master's from Revel. That's why, not because Rav Schechter once believed in Taramada, and he believes, and he has a different version of Taramada. No, by Rebbe's, because he never believed. He always believed in something different, but he had to take it. He had no choice. So Rav Schechter and Rav, they all have master's degrees from Revel. They're, you know, great Wissenschaft scholars. So Professor Feldblum had this theory, which I think is wrong, but it really created controversy, that the Rambam did not accept the authority of the Stam, of the anonymous layer of the Gemara. And this was particularly radioactive. And I think it's not correct, but I think that it's a theory that's coming off data that the Achronim already, some of the Achronim already addressed, or by the Mishnah of Rishon addressed already, a recognition of the pattern of Psach and the Rambam. And the Rambam says this effectively in his Tshuva of the Chas Meinunel. Firstly, I don't think it has anything to do with the anonymous layer of the Gemara, because if I'm correct, and that's, by the way, when I told you, my intuition was that the Rambam was going to split the Psach, is precisely because I've seen this enough times in the Rambam to know that this seems to be, intuitively, I have more than one occasion, not because I have great intuition, but because I think about this question, many cases I've come across, it's like, oh yeah, no surprise that the Rambam seems to, according to a sugya in the Gemara, has contradictory ideas. Before we go here, you guys forgot to mention perhaps the most significant approach, most common approach to solving the problem of the Rambam. No, that was suggested by Ezra's father. Ezra?
The Rambam has a bit of Gemara that we don't have, that has a different...
Close.
Someone who holds that tradition.
We have another sugya. We have another sugya that embodies a different assumption. In other words, yes, this sugya clearly holds that the Mishnayos are connected to one another. But there's another sugya, and that's one of the approaches that Tzlach takes. There's another sugya, a daf later, which assumes not like this Gemara's connection to the Mishnayos. And therefore, the Rambam ignored this Gemara in favor of that Gemara. That, to me, that's probably outside of yourselves, which occasionally but rarely solve the problem. That is the first place that I actually would look to see. The Rambam might see a theorist of sugyas. Remember that Chachmei Ashkenaz, this is the method of Balei Tosfos, almost never saw two sugyas that contradicted each other, that they couldn't resolve, you know, with their dialectic method. And the Rambam and the Rif, following the tradition of the Gonim, are much faster to say, it's a machlokes ha-sugyos, and you have to decide which one you're going to pass from it. Okay, but now coming back to this. So the Rambam was asked by the Chachmei Lenel, I'm going to summarize, the Rambam's tshuva, it's about a somewhat sophisticated, complicated issue in the third parak of Ksubos and Dinam of Bakos. And the Rambam was asked by the Chachmei Lenel about a statement that he wrote in the Mishneh Torah, and they said they couldn't find a makor for this. That wouldn't be the first time the Rambam wrote something, we couldn't find a makor. Usually when there is none, he tells us here rightly. And secondly, they said it seems to contradict something the Gemara says in the third parak of Ksubos. So what's going on? So the Rambam writes both in the first paragraph and in the last line of the Tshuva, the Rambam writes that the Al Kol Panim, if you go to the way into the Tshuva, the Al Kol Panim, lo mi divrei masa umatan nifsok halacha kemo shebeyanu. Masa umatan is the Hebrew equivalent of shakla v'tarya. So the Rambam says, you often don't pass the like the Shachar Atari. The Gemara goes through a whole, you know, calculation and comparing things, and so on, but sometimes we just don't pass the Refah. Now, of course, you might ask the question, well, how then do you pass it? It's not like the Gemara Shachar Atari. So the answer lies, and I know the Rambam doesn't use this language clearly here, but I think it's implied. But it's used in a comment by the Magid Mishnah on a different sugya. So very briefly, that sugya is the following. We have a din of ish, nizkei ish. I light a fire, it spreads to your property, I have to pay for the damages. There is a special din within ish, the chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda, we pass like the chachamim, that tamun va ish is potter. That if you have a haystack, and in that haystack you decided to stash your MacBook Air, and then the fire burns the entire haystack, I don't have to pay you for the loss of the MacBook Air, because I have to pay you as if that empty space were hay. In other words, I pay as if it were a goddess malachitim, as opposed to having a MacBook Air in the middle. That's what the Gemara, a number of Mishnayos in the sixth parak, which are the primary sugyos of Nizkeish. In the second parak, Derech Agav, the Gemara has a famous sugya about Ish, a machlokas of Yochanan of Ishlakish, whether Isha Misha Mechitzav or Isha Misha Mamona. When I am chayav for Ish, is that because it's like I shot my arrows, literally, or is it because it's my property that goes and does not, my ox goes and runs and does damage, my boar stands here and does damage, so my chayav goes and does damage. Now, as part of the Gemara has whatever nafkaminas that it has, the primary one being, whether you're chayav for Arba Dvarim, if I injure another person with Ish, do I have to pay? Tsar Shevet Sweeper Doshes besides the Nezek. If it's because Isha Misham Chitzah is Adam Hamazik. Isha Misham Amono is only Chayef in Nezek. Yeah, the Gemara, by the way, struggles, it comes up with certain cases where Isha was Misham Amono according to everybody. Where I lit a fire, and at the time I lit the fire, there was a wall, and then the wall fell down, and I had enough time to build the wall up. But since when I lit the fire, there was a wall there, Kabbal no Chitzah, so I'm only Chayef on my Ish because of Mamono Hamazik. That's what the Gemara says. So, the Gemara, at the end of the sugya, I put it here, Rava says, Abaye was bothered by the following question. If you say that Isha Misham Chitzav, like Rabbi Yochanan, why is there a Ptura of Taman Ba'esh? If I take an arrow and I shoot it at your haystack, and lo and behold, there's a MacBook Air in the middle, I have to pay for the damages in your MacBook Air. So why is it that I would be Patur on Taman? And the Gemara's answer is, you're only in Patur on Taman in the cases where Kalu lo Chitzav. Which means that the exemption of Taman Ba'esh is a very, very narrow one. It's in these weird cases. Otherwise, even according to the Chachamim, you're chayav on Talmud Beish. Okay, very nice. You go to the Rambam's Psach in Hilchas Nizkei Mamon, and the Rambam says that if a person's fire goes and injures another person, you have to pay Nezek, Sheves, Ripoy, Tzar, and Voshes, like manage the Yado, because even though your fire is your Mamon, Areyu Kemosh Hizik Bechitzav, it's like you're damaged with your arrows. Okay. So if that's the case, you would expect when the Rambam talks about Nizkei Tamud Ba'esh, he would say, there's a din that you're potter on Tamud Ba'esh, but that din only applies in the case of Kalu lo Chitzav. But what does the Rambam say when he talks about Tamud? It says that you're chayav? It says that you're potter on Tamud Ba'esh? Nothing. But the Gemara said very clearly. There was no debate. The only debate is with Isha Misham Chitzav Shemona. The Gemara was very clear. So the Magid Mishnah writes, he says, he asks this question. It's on the sheet. And he gets to the end, he says, Ulai Shirabenu Mefarsha Bifarim Acheres. Maybe he explains that sugya in the second paragraph. He explains it somehow differently. The Efshar Shedato Zal, it could be that his opinion is, She'en Lahaniach Pshat HaMishnayis VaHabraisos VaHameros Shalal Chilko B'tamim Ne'a Sugyahi. No other Gemara explicitly contradicts this assertion of the Gemara. But he says that Pshat in all these things is the Mishkarit Kitzurasa. You put on Tamar Beish according to Chachamim. I don't need a lundus of Isha Misham Chitzav, Isha Misham Amana. So the Rambam basically ignores the Beferish of the Gemara. It's really, that's classic Shach Levitari. I would call it Ukimtas. In favor of reading the Mishnah to Pshuta. And yes, the other sugyos don't mention it. The Eko sugyos of Esha and the sixth character, they don't mention it. But they don't contradict it either. The Rambam said, yeah, that's Shach Levitari. But we don't pass through really like Shach Levitari. Now again, it's not Shach Levitari of the Stam of the Gemara. That's Rava talking. I got one final example of this, which is relates to the mitzvah of Ktziras HaOmer. Right, Ktziras HaOmer is cutting the Omer. We normally think the ritual is you cut the Omer the night of the 16th, the first day of Chol HaMoed Sukkos in Eretz Yisrael, and you bring the korban over the next day. But what happens if the first day of Pesach comes out on Shabbos? So the night preceding the 16th, no, it comes out on Friday. It can't come out that way in our calendar. It's true, it never comes out on calendar, but in the time of Chazal, it can come out that way. But Pesach comes out on Friday, very nice, so Motzei Yom Tov is Shabbos. So what are you going to do? So the fact that the carbon, you're going to bring the carbon Omer on Shabbos, that's fine, because we bring all sorts of carbonos on Shabbos. If they're carbonos tiba, then I cover as well. But in this case, what am I going to do about cutting the Omer? So the Gemara assumes there's a machlokas whether tzivas Omer is docha Shabbos. And if it's not docha Shabbos, it means you have to cut the Omer from before Yom Tov. The Gemara has another question, which is, what if that the Omer is cut during the day? Niksar bayom. Let's say, okay, you didn't wait till the night. You were an eager beaver, Erev Pesach, you were getting everything done, so you just cut the grain for the Omer too. Is it kosher or not? So there too, there is a machlokas, where the Niksar bayom is kosher. The Mishnah in Menachos says, literally in back-to-back phrases, Niktar Bayom is kosher, V'docha es HaShabbos. It says that if it's cut during the day, it is kosher, and it's Docha Shabbos. Now, it doesn't explicitly say what's Docha Shabbos. So the Gemara, at the end of the Perek, goes through a lengthy discussion of this issue and reaches the pretty clear conclusion that if you hold that Niksar Bayom is kosher, then you're not allowed to cut the Omer on Shabbos, because you can do it from before Shabbos. Following Rabbi Akiva's general rule by Karban Pesach, by Mila, that any Machshirei Mitzvah that can be done before Shabbos must be done before Shabbos. So the Gemara ends up saying that Tziras HaOmer is Niksar Bayom is kosher, and you know what the Dochas HaShabbos means? It means bringing the Karban, things that have to be done of the Karban, burning the parts of it that have to be done on Shabbos are done on Shabbos. Question is, okay, so it should be very, very simple. So you'd expect that you're going to paskin either that Tziras HaOmer is kosher bayom, but it's not docha Shabbos, or it's not kosher bayom and it's docha Shabbos. And surprise, surprise, the Rambam writes in two back-to-back halachos, mitzvaso likotze v'alayla b'lo shisha asa, bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos. So Tziras is docha Shabbos. B'chol alayla kosher v'tziras HaOmer, but in kitzaru bayom, kosher. So the Lecha Mishnah just writes, that's what the Lecha Mishnah says. I don't understand what's going on here. The Gemara said that those two are mutually exclusive. Now, I just want to point out to you, though, the simple reading of the Mishnah is exactly like the Lecha. Nixer by Yom is kosher. Vidocha, I know the Gemara says Vidocha Sashabbos means the other Avodah Sashabbos. But the Pshat is, Nixer by is all about Tziras Omer. Nixer by Yom is kosher, and Nixer is Docha Shabbos. In other words, Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita in effect, even though you could do it from before Shabbos. So he just writes, "Ulurabenu zal shachila kadvarim lo yadati tam v'tzarachim." That's what he answers. So I think the answer is the very same thing. The Rambam here, the Shitaso, sometimes thinks that when you have pshutan, the way the Magen Mishnah says, when you have pshutan of Mishnayos and Brisos and Memers that say something very straightforward, even though you have the shachila v'tarya, the Rambam says it's like kalderach b'chia. It's not really to be taken seriously. I could probably bring, if I had actually written these things down as I passed them, another 10 examples easily in the Rambam, where he paskins what the Gemara seems to be, says two contradictory opinions, because he is reading Kipshat in the Mishnah, in the Braisa, maybe in the Nemras of the Amorai. So that might be the answer to the Rambam here as well. The Pshat in the Mishnah is exactly the way the second interpretation of the Yerushalmi says it. Not because the Yerushalmi says it, but because that's Pshat in the Mishnah. And now, the Rambam, the Babli says, catches, oh, who's that? So it says, oh, yeah, that's from Yehuda and Bikur. The Rambam says, that's nice, that's an Ukinta, but the Pshat in the Mishnah says this is the Din. There's an obvious Svar for it, which is the second presentation of Yerushalmi. Not because the Yerushalmi says it, but because it's an obvious Svar. And therefore, we don't necessarily follow Ukimtos. So therefore, it's possible to pass through like the Chachamim in Bikurim against Rabbi Yehuda, and yet you can still say that Birech HaPirasat Elam Bari Kredema is Yatza, because it's obvious. Okay, let's take questions. Ronnie?
If it was so obvious that the shot in the Akkot was that, like, the Yisrael is just another category. So, like, the Stam writers are smart. Like, they knew that also. So what motivated them to try to learn
you can. The question is not only here. The question is everywhere else, that very same question. You know, so the... the real question for the Rambam is, where did he get off with this idea? That's really the question. You know, we're going to talk tomorrow about why I think there's a very interesting reason why I think the Gemara does what it does here. The question, it's a different way. You're asking, right, that's the question you're asking. I think that there's an answer to the question. Why did the Gemara choose to go down the more difficult path? Right? In the other cases, it's more obvious. Like Nitzah Bayom and Docha Shabbos makes perfect sense because it's trying to fit in with a broadly accepted logical principle that you can only do on Shabbos that which you couldn't do before Shabbos. You know, so some cases it's obvious why the Gemara does something. Some cases it's less obvious. So the real question is why the Rambam felt that he, you know, on what basis did the Rambam have this idea that Shach and the Kariah somehow occupies a lesser status, that you don't have to pass the light Shach and the Kariah. That's a good question. I don't know what the answer is. He just says it to the Chachmei Lunel. He doesn't say I have a Gaonic tradition or something like that. Okay, any other questions?